Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello and welcome to episode 4, season 1 of The Ball Bags. I'm joined with the full complement of the bottom feeder athlete. How are you, mate?
How are you, boys?
Glad to be back. And, of course, after a week in absence, we're joined again by the coach. He's going to give us a positive intro this week instead of his, I'm okay.
Yeah, thanks for the call during the holiday. I know you were trying to obviously record last week's pod and decided to ring me at the dinner table and include me in the chat. That was nice of you. Thanks.
Yeah, you didn't have to answer, mate. Anyway... We're a lot to get through this week, so it was another brilliant weekend of sport. So we're going to have the bottom feeder athletes take on the NFL, the coaches take on the English Premier League, and then it'll be kind of my sort of take on the United Rugby Championship. In addition to, obviously, have you seen this, and player of the weekend. We're going with a slightly different format to the player of the weekend. We're going to kind of try and fight our case for our individual player of the weekend that was posted to the social media over the course of the weekend. So, without much further ado, the bottom feeder athlete, who was your player of the weekend and why?
So, I kind of went with the old boring pick of Mahomes is back, but I think the Chiefs needed that win.
Don't lie. You woke up and you chose violence.
I did, yeah.
You said, I know an Eagles fan.
Look, you 5 touchdowns. It's very hard like not to be the best player in the league when you have 5 touchdowns, isn't it? Like...
Yeah,
he was back. He's back to his. Not that he was playing really badly, but he's had a couple of really kind of weird picks. And I know he threw one yesterday as well, on Sunday night. But yeah, kind of Mahomes. The Chiefs needed a big win there now, especially after the Chargers got a win last night, and that division is flying, so they can't lose any more ground now.
Coach, who was your player of the weekend?
I'll probably touch on that a little bit later. It's hard to look past Mohamed Salah. He's kind of had one of those weekends that has slingshot him again to the top of Premier League, you know, scoring charts and record breaking charts and stuff like that. We'll probably touch on a little bit later, but I don't know what he did against City on Sunday. It was pretty incredible. It's not often that it's not often these days you want to say, or particularly in association football, you want to say that someone single-handedly has done something, but it was that kind of performance, I think, from him on the weekend. So, and it's been consistent this year since the start of the season, so it's hard to look past, I think.
Okay. My personal one, and look, it wasn't for stats he brought to the game, or it was kind of more a sentimental pick, but Snyman of Munster, obviously after the 13 months he's had at Munster, to see him come on, carry well, and get on the score sheet, I just kind of thought, you know what? There's a bloke who could do with a plug. I'd also just quickly like to give a quick shout out to kind of the few fans that also recommended some players. OB number 8 recommended Joe Burrow, who obviously was fantastic on Thursday night against the Jags. And then a particular shout out to Rock Ape Sniper. He's a gentleman who always engages with kind of our stuff on social media. And he had picked out Trevion Diggs, so brother of Stefan, who's become a picking machine in Dallas. So two NFL ones, I suppose, as well. Both, obviously, worthy of a mention. So, gentlemen, who do you think, of all the players listed, is the player of the weekend in association with our affiliate partners, The Athletic?
I think it's very hard to look past Snyman. Like, I think that's... From an all-round performance, the men of Munster had an unbelievable comeback. I don't know if anyone was watching it, but it was a great game for the neutral. And everything that goes with Snyman and the injuries he had last year. And okay, granted, is he the highest paid player down there or whatever, but I think he's owed them, and I think it's just kicking off the kind of... he's kicking off his repayments here with that performance and that try.
Yeah. Happy to go with Snyman. Bottom feeder athlete, or
yeah, go on. I'll give you the considering the Eagles lost, you can have it. Yeah, like I don't like look Snyman is not as sexy as Mahomes in the pick, is it? But like, look, go on.
And to be fair, I think Salah's going to get picked a few weeks, but it looks of it.
Oh, geez, he's unbelievable.
He's going to be in contention in a few weeks, so look, it's Snyman's week to shine.
Yeah, look,
isn't
it nice
just giving him a pity pick like this? Like,
it probably is. But look, I just thought, yeah, look, sentimental value alone, sometimes certain things are bigger than sport. But anyway, kicking off, obviously another week four of the NFL. So bottom feeder athlete is going to volley back at some of my questions directed in his direction. To kick it off, we would be remiss to not obviously bring up the return of Tom to Foxborough. So although the performance probably wasn't there, Tom has now completed the NFL. He's beaten every side. But has he at this stage... Jesus, very unprofessional. Where's Roy Keane? Has he now at this stage usurped Tiger, LeBron, Jordan, Serena, et al. As sports greatest of all time?
I had a big debate about this in my own head, and it was like,
I'd say that went on a while.
It did, yeah, it did. Like, and when you get like rid of the butterflies and all the bad thoughts that he'd be having, it was. Like, he's definitely the greatest American sportsman, isn't he? Really, like, I think, apart from, like, the only person I could see kind of challenge him now is if Tiger made some miraculous comeback and won even just a regular PGA event. I don't think LeBron is even close to him. And, like, obviously Jordan has his own thing, as he's the greatest basketball player to ever live. If it was a more global sport, I don't know if I would agree with him being the greatest sportsman of all time, but I've kind of settled on he's definitely like the best North American sportsman of all time.
Perfect. I'll come back to you throughout the series about Jordan versus LeBron. Anyway, following on from last week's debate, you're definitely one of those people who only made that opinion when you seen The Last Dance during lockdown one. That and after watching Tiger King, a mullet and an eyebrow piercing, brilliant look for you.
No, I'm not having that. I think that is really, really a good point. Well made.
Oh yeah, just to join the bottom feeder,
and particularly because I don't like this whole thing with, you know, the NBA, NFL, and the NHL going, oh, we're champions of the world. You're not champions of the world. You're champions of one continent. Not even.
It's a big continent. The South American.
It's a big continent.
No, look, and I understand. I don't understand this. It was just a general question because of. There comes a time when the achievements you've had, even if it's only in the, like, if it's a sport or you played in one continent, the achievements that you've had, they have to be compared.
I think it was quite nice as well. Did you see the really quick 2 second hug Bill gave Tom at the end of that game? It was like real awkward, but apparently he spent like 20 minutes plus in the dressing room
exactly,
in private.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which was, I'd love to know what we're talking about, like, genuinely.
I wonder, was Please Come Back mentioned?
Why did you leave me?
Do you think, just on the side, don't you, do you think that is the last ever appearance of Brady at Foxborough? Or, like, is that even a conversation? Why don't you come back for a season, like, after Tampa? Like, does he have that in him? As in, what is he now? What age, 44?
With the way the schedule goes, though, I think he's, like, he's going to be 48 before he ever plays in Foxborough again, if he stays
Tampa. Unless he, yeah.
So if he goes somewhere else, like, would you bet?
Does he go back? Is that possible?
Could be. If he becomes a free agent, yeah, of course it is. But I don't think so. The only time I think I'll see Tom is if he replaces Belichick's son on the sideline. I don't know if you've seen some of them faces. They're kind of doing the rounds on social. My God. You know, for me, Tom is done with Foxborough.
Is he done with football after Tampa?
Yes.
Straight into modelling.
No, I think, to be honest with you, look, as much as I'll bash Tom, his family's huge to Tom, and I think his wife has sacrificed so much for his, like, to be fair, it's not Boston, like, New England is not great to be one of the world's top models, so she has sacrificed an awful lot. Florida obviously is a bit better, but I do think it's time to let her kind of go and run her.
Does she have a modeling career still?
She doesn't, but she's still one of the most recognizable names in it. True. I don't know, look, to be honest, it's not a modeling podcast. So question two. Following on from last week's...
But it is a model podcast. Sorry, just yes. wanted to put that out there.
Okay, those puns are kind of pushing the demographic up to 40 plus, I think. Following on from last week's debate, was week 4 for Sam Darnold and Matt Stafford a fair reflection of where they're at, or was it a rare blip?
I think both of them... We'll start with Sam first. I watched Sam make some really nice plays. Like, he's a really nice habit of breaking these guaranteed would-be sacks and making, like, really nice throws. I think he's in a great spot still. I know he wasn't as good as he'd shown, like, weeks 1 to 3, but that's the best team they've played as well. And he still made some pretty nice plays. Now, there was a couple of bad sacks he took in there as well, and the two interceptions he threw to Trevon Diggs, who is an absolute machine of a ball hawk. The first one was just really bad over the middle, and the second one, he was just trying to force something on that out route, just trying to get back into the game, and that effectively just kind of killed it. But I think, like, Matt Rhule would be really happy with him. If that's the worst game he'll have this year, and I think it probably is, like, his kind of floor, he's getting a lot of rushing touchdowns as well. I think they're in a good spot. I think they could be, like, the worst wildcard team in the NFC this year. And that's not, like, for them, from where they were last year, like, to be the worst wildcard team, they didn't know what he was going to bring to the table. They were just kind of gambling on just the upside and, like, the potential we'd seen in the Jets. I'm not worried about him, and I'm certainly not worried about Stafford either. Like, the Cardinals just come out and blitzed him. Like, he didn't give up all those points. You know, that vaunted Rams defense didn't perform this week, so I wouldn't be worried about either of them, genuinely.
Yeah, and just on Sam Darnold, and look, maybe it's a biased opinion as an Eagles fan, but I think if McCaffrey's in that game, that opens a lot up a lot more and takes a lot more pressure off Sam Darnold against that Cowboys defense.
He does need to learn how to go out and take that game by the scruff of the neck as well, though. And in fairness to him, he tried and he threw 2 really bad interceptions. But, like, he's either going to kind of kick on now and dust that off him and just get progressively better this year. And I think that's well within his limits.
Fair. Happy with that. Question 3. Rookie watch. Who impressed you and who obviously didn't impress you?
So I know we talked about kind of Micah Parsons a few weeks ago. He is an absolute game changer for that Dallas defense. And I know obviously Diggs is there behind him as well. But, like, they had nothing, and now suddenly he's given them so much speed in that middle, and he's a really nice player. Like, he can do everything for them. And another player then is Penei Sewell for the Lions, who's had a really kind of rough start with the preseason. They were moving him to right tackle, and then you're kind of like, why are you moving him to right tackle? Like, he's a left tackle. He's an absolute behemoth of a man as well. But, like, he got a few particularly nasty pass rushers up in the first few weeks. And the only one that's really kind of given him absolute bother was Robert Quinn. So he's actually played really well when they've just said, look, we'll move you back, or do you know what I mean, and settle down. He's given Goff a better kind of platform to play off, and I know whatever about the Lions and stuff, but, like, he has actually performed really well. And then Justin Fields has obviously kind of had a bit of a better game under that more let's do what you're good at vertical kind of passing game this week as well. So those are the 3 rookies I kind of thought had made bit of a, like, Justin Fields just this week, like, he made a steadier impact, but the 2 Parsons and Sewell have been really good now for the first quarter of their careers.
Just to throw one in there as well, I don't know, Coach, if you have anything else to, I think we would be remiss to not mention Zach Wilson in the Giants, obviously picking up their first win. He did kind of play. He played a good game, to be fair to him.
He made 1 throw in that game on his 20-yard line on the move and hit it onto the other 20. And that's what he brings to the table. He's so dynamic when...
For a small man.
Yeah, but like, he's got some, like, he does have moxie about him, but like, it's the chaos that just kind of embroils New York in general. It's just going to drag him down. Like, for every play you get like that, like, he's got 7 interceptions. You know, it's a, he needs to learn how to take these kind of 5-yard, 7-yard throws, keeping them in drives, and not relying on, you know, these massive kind of wristy flicks down the field for 60 yards or whatever. And everyone's like, ooh, that's really nice. It's like, yeah, but they're not winning any games with it. So it'll be, I think his progression is going to be the most interesting, because I think he is the most to adjust out of the rest of them. Because he's pure, like, he's very much kind of like raw kind of Mahomes, and he comes out as a pure sandlot, like, and it's like, I can make loads of stuff happen on the random, but as if, can he settle into a system a bit more and then take those massive chunk plays when he gets the opportunity to do so.
Okay, and who didn't, I suppose, impress you?
Like, Lawrence has obviously been a big disappointment over the course of the 4 weeks. I'm kind of looking at this kind of over the few weeks, like, who settled in really well and who's not. Obviously, he was much steadier against the Bengals, but it's the Bengals. So, I don't think, obviously, like, the Urban Meyer thing and Jacksonville are helping him be the best player he can be at the minute. Like, he's such an athlete. He can really move. They're not doing enough of that with him. I think they need to kind of be looking at getting him outside the pocket as much as possible and making these easier throws for him, instead of just, like, they've kind of gone full, like, Peyton Manning with him, haven't they? Like,
yeah,
well, it was, you're going to take your lumps this year and really, like, come good. Like, they really want to make sure they don't break him. They'd want to hope, like, mentally, like, he's actually able for this, because he is in for a really rough year by the looks of it now.
He is. Now, I just caught a clip last night. David Carr, obviously brother of Derek Carr, who was a high vaunted draft pick and kind of failed in Houston, was on Colin Cowherd, and he kind of, they were chatting about Trevor Lawrence, and what he brought up was a very interesting point. And it was like, so Trevor Lawrence was in an extremely proficient high school program. He obviously, the stats have been lobbied around about how many games he lost or whatever, and then he went to Clemson as a true freshman. He won a national college championship. And what David Carr has been saying to him is, I'm kind of touching this sporadically, about, like, being a rookie quarterback drafted high, you're kind of in a worse position. But his point is, said to him, was that it wasn't until maybe his third year, when he kind of had gone through it all and was probably not long left in the league, that Troy Aikman was talking to him and said, like, has anyone ever told you that you don't need, your team is not ready to win? So your job is not to win the game anymore. It's just to not lose the game until such a time that the team is ready. And I think Jacksonville's kind of in that rebuild, and he's trying to win the game. He doesn't have the players to win the game.
They really don't have the cattle, do they? Like,
no.
At all.
But by the time they do have the cattle, he might be spent. His job is to kind of almost play damage limitations and not be spent by the time they have a roster ready to go. Because they'll probably get a few high draft picks again this year.
It's just physically, if he's going to be able to take that beating as well. Like, I'm not one to turn around and just question his mental toughness, because, like, he's won a pile of games. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's clearly, there's clearly something there. Like, we've all seen it. If anyone has ever watched him, like, he makes some special throws, but, like, you're kind of more worried about him physically. Like, he was spoken in the same breath with Andrew Luck, but, like, he could suffer the same fate as well if they're not careful with how, like, if they get him moving out of pocket more, like, he's going to be able to look after himself a little bit better, because he will just hang in there, and he's getting drilled at the moment too. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they're going to be able to expand the game plan, and really kind of what's happening there with the coach and stuff as well. And, you know, not to get too much into it, but, like, it's going to have a huge impact on him.
Okay, moving on. So, look, obviously we've touched on Cincy. So, after an impressive outing on Thursday, has Burrow and that combination with Ja'Marr Chase, have they got what it takes to overcome obviously decade long and current dysfunction in Cincy.
It's mad, isn't it? Everyone lost their mind over Chase after he had 5 drops in the preseason. It's like, oh, he can't catch a ball. And then you forget, like,
preseason means nothing.
Have you seen, like, Justin Jefferson by any chance, who is like balling? Like, Ja'Marr Chase is the best receiver on that LSU team. It wasn't Jefferson, it was Chase. It was Chase since he was a freshman. He is a freak. And Burrow trusts him. And, like, Joe, what do you say about Joe? Like, Joe could ride your girlfriend into battle and you'd follow him. Like, wouldn't you really? Like, he's humble. Like, he's so smooth. Like, everything he does is just...
Oh, we're getting cancelled.
He doesn't he doesn't have a huge, like, he's not this built in a lab quarterback that everyone wants now. But he makes some really, really good throws with anticipation. Like, that's his game, and if you give him a chance with a couple of minutes, like, you kind of feel like he's just gonna drag everything out to just try and get a result. Like, not so much Ja'Marr. Like, I think he's obviously in a situation there with Burrow, and they're going to be a really good duo for a while. But I think Burrow is just dragging that whole organization with him. It's like my way or the highway. I don't know about the coach, but I think they're all like, for the first time in how long is Cincinnati just like, yeah, we're all in on this guy. He's just going to take, like, they're 3-1 as well. Like, do they have any business being?
Well,
it's him. Like, it is him. Yeah. Like, that's the common denominator. Is like, he is, and like, I don't even think he's nearly at his best either. Like, he's still only games removed from certain, like, from his ACL tear. Like, how much
that? And you look at his college development. It wasn't until like kind of his senior year that he kind of really came through on the college scene, having left the Ohio Buckeyes to go to LSU. Wouldn't be corrected on that.
Apparently, he's maniacal, like.
Yeah. So, you know, I've raps on Joe Burrow. Hopefully, though, it's not a disaster in Cincy, because they have a tendency to.
Yeah.
Blow good talent. Let's just put it that way. And finally, just to round this out with a little bit of speculation. So, Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin kind of shared a moment, kind of a slightly romantic moment, I think it was, on Sunday night. And it started to spark a bit of debate that Rodgers would end up in Pittsburgh come next season. For you, though, where does Rodgers end up next season?
Denver, probably, to be honest with you.
Really?
I get, like, it's... The Broncos kind of have that thing that's like, hey, look, if... You're like this top tier quarterback getting ready to go into the sunset. They kind of set that vibe now with Elway, and, you know, winning his title in the last years, and then like Peyton obviously going that way. Like, can you see Aaron Rodgers playing in Pittsburgh? Like, in fairness, his game is suited to it because it's cold up there as well, and he's obviously played in Green Bay for a long time. But I think if he was looking at the rosters now and the weapons, I think the Broncos are a really good shout with him. Like, even if Teddy plays, you know, to the maximum, I know we were talking on Teddy as well, like, you know, if you play to the maximum of your ability and stuff, like, he's still not Aaron Rodgers, you know, and if you're in with a shot to get him, I think the Broncos would be the favourites to land him. But I don't know, like, is there a possibility that, like, maybe Green Bay, can they kiss and make up and just be? It's hard to see it happening.
I don't know. I still think the allure of going home to California could be huge. If I had to put a wild pick out there, a little bit further east, Las Vegas. They need a money quarterback. Derek Carr, look, he's admirable, but is he going to get you over the hump? No. If you put Aaron Rodgers in Las Vegas, new setup there. It's not a million miles away from California. You can go home. I just think,
playing the sunshine.
Imagine matchups of Herbert, Mahomes.
I'd rather not think Rodgers. To be honest, like, I'd rather he didn't come down there.
What about you, coach? Anyone else? Just to round this out.
I just don't see why, like, Green Bay, it's a bit of a slog, I'd say, living there and stuff like that. Like, I don't see why he wouldn't go for pastures new in a warmer environment. Obviously, he's got a superstar girlfriend or fiance or whatever she is now as well. I think
you're
really
honing in the modeling this week, aren't you?
Yeah, really honing in.
I think it's a big city he's probably going to go to, or a warmer climate. Like Tom Brady, if he wants to elongate his career, I think that's probably what he needs. It is.
On the bones.
Yeah, it gets in on the bones. Yeah, it gets under that skin. But yeah, that's the way I'd see it going. And like Denver, it's not, you know, it's.
Nicky, it's not the Denver Broncos.
Unless you're a massive South Park fan. But I just think Green Bay is kind of similar to Denver. They struggle with them with attracting them free agents. And that's kind of something Rodgers has always touched upon in his career, is that Green Bay is a hard sell for free agents. New York, Los Angeles, they're easy sells for free agents. And that's kind of what it comes back to. But look, we've chatted enough about the NFL. So I'm going to hand you over now to Bottom Feeder Atlee. He's going to roll reversal and he's going to lobby some questions at the coach.
Oh, no.
So... obviously Jamie Carragher lost his mind after Salah's performance on the weekend, and even I did, in fairness, which is hard to say considering I hate Liverpool. But do you agree with Carragher at the minute that Salah might just be the best player in the world right now in form? And if it's not Salah, who do you think is currently top dog right now?
No, it's Salah. Next question.
I'm going to interject.
No, look, at this current moment in time, at the end of the day, it has to. I don't know how you can look past. Like, it's not Messi anymore. Let's be honest. I was always a Messi versus Ronaldo person. I was always the Messi side of the debate. And now I'm going, well, if Messi goes to PSG and they don't win anything, well, this has been, even if Ronaldo comes out this year with a cup or a record, and Messi comes out with nothing, well, surely Ronaldo balances the scales, because arguably he's gone to the tougher league.
Can you categorically say he's better than Mbappe and Haaland, though, without a shadow of a doubt?
Yeah, I think you can. Like, for the level that they're playing at, I think you can. I'm not convinced that Haaland does the same thing in the Premier League every week.
I think he would. He's an absolute.
And this is my fear.
I think he goes a little bit more like Lukaku. Like, okay, yeah, he's going to be a goal scorer. He's not going to go out and get, you know, 40 goals a season.
But my big fear is, like, not that we overvalue the Premiership, but we overvalue the gap between the Premiership and all other leagues. Like, yeah, obviously the Premiership is that little bit better, but I don't think it's as big as we kind of try to make it out.
No, it's not, but I think it's more, you have more competitive games.
Like, yeah, fair.
Top to bottom, yeah, definitely.
You definitely, 100%.
Very valid.
100%.
Let me lobby Germany.
Outside your top 5-6 teams, are you getting competitive games? Probably not. In France, it's probably less so. Outside the top four.
Let me lobby.
You're gonna get your one blooper. A couple of bloopers a season, but it's not as competitive as Premier League.
Well, let me lobby a question for you. Just a quick question, and then I'm gone.
Go on, lobby it, and we'll see how we get on.
How can you be the best player in the world if you're not the most important player in your team? If Salah's out injured for the next 6 months, Liverpool challenge for title. If Van Dijk's not, you don't. Fact, we've seen it last year. So how
big
can he be the best player in the world?
Big Verge right now, huh?
So hold on a second. See, if you take Mbappe out of PSG, you think they're not going to challenge for the league?
I think they will.
They're going to walk it even without Mbappe. You could take out Mbappe and Messi, yeah, but still walk it.
But what about the Premier League now?
Well, that's not what you lobbied.
It is. I lobbied. How can it be the most important
if
player?
If you take Haaland out of Dortmund, you think they're not going to be top three, or not going to?
They probably will still be top three. Yeah.
Oh, I think he's special, lad. He's so good. Like, he just railroads lads as well. He's unbelievable.
Like, look at how far RB Salzburg have fallen since they got rid of Haaland.
Okay, Dortmund, since they played last game, Augsburg, no Haaland, 1-2-1. As in, he didn't score. Game before that, Malin scored. Game before that, they lost 1-0. Game before that, okay, Haaland scored 2. So that's 2 in 4 games, which both came in 1 game. Before that, beat Besiktas away. Okay, Haaland scored. So he's got 3 in 5 there. But then, like, you look at the quality. They lost to Freiburg away, like.
Haaland, no, I'm not saying Salah is not one of the best on current form, but I'm just
Salah is currently the best, and in the individual thing, if you put Salah into Haaland's shoes against Dortmund, he's gonna. I think he does better than Salah or better than Haaland.
Why didn't he do it at Chelsea? Why didn't he do it at? He limited at Fiorentina.
Maturation.
I just think it's funny that there's three people arguing here. There's one Liverpool fan, and the only person screaming he's the best player in the world is
that. Right, look, if say Salah didn't exist and you take him out, who's the best player in the world after that? You're probably going, like, you can't go and say Mbappe, because he's just not doing it.
Probably for me.
But I'd be looking at Lewandowski. I'd throw Lukaku out there as up there. Definitely top five.
That's a reach.
But then the problem is that we have this thing of recency bias, definitely.
Absolutely.
Everyone, not just us three around the mics, but everyone has a recency bias. So Salah goes and scores in the weekend, oh, he's best in the world. If Ronaldo had come on the weekend and banged one in, they won the game. Guess what our conversation would be about? Like, and Ronaldo didn't. And the thing is, Ronaldo has shown his insecurities and his immature and all this sort of stuff by walking off the pitch. Now, we'll probably talk about that in a little bit.
The next point.
Yeah, so that isn't the best player in the world to me. The best player in the world does things for the team as well.
Yeah, right, look.
Now, if Salah started on the bench in the weekend, maybe it'd be a different story, but I don't think you get that.
Let's agree, because we're not going to have it's not the Salah podcast, but let's just agree that Salah was the best player in the world last weekend. All right? Is that fair enough?
That's absolutely fair. But even if you go to the first four games of the season, who's the best player in the world? Four. What are we in? How many games are we in now? Six?
Seven.
So you go to seven, roughly seven across Europe. Who's the best player that stood out so far? It has to be Salah. Now, we also have this thing, not only recency bias, we also have attacking bias. We never pick the defensive players or the midfielders that are holding the game together as best players.
That's why
I
brought up Van Dijk.
Yeah, and I'm sure in my opinion, there's a lot more players standing out at centre back and centre midfield at the moment than there is strikers.
Well, you see, the attacking player is the casual fan's pick.
Yeah, it's the defender. Yeah,
right.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah.
Next.
Moving on from that. I'm gonna leave. There's one here I want to leave to last. What is Watford's ceiling under?
Oh, yeah, I was planning on a different. You've stitched me up there. You've stitched me up good
no,
and proper.
Everyone's going to be last, yeah.
He has to calm you down to bring you back up again.
Yeah, yeah. Just knock you down a bit there.
Watford's ceiling under Ranieri, I think it was an incredibly. What's the word I'm looking for? It was way too soon. Daft. It's dafty. I think it was an incredibly daft decision. Like, you're sitting. Myself and the Sasquatch were talking about it before we came on air. They're sitting 15th in the league, 7 from 7, which is you're staying up for them. 38 points is usually what you get. You get 38 from 38 at a draw a game, you're staying up. They've got 7 from 7 with a reasonably good home form. If they kept going with the home form they had, I think they might have had 4 away games and 3 home. But either way, right, I think they have 2 home wins. No, they had a 4. 2 home wins, a draw and a loss. Like, if they kept that form up for the rest of the season, they're going to be safe without doubt. They're going to finish about 12th, 11th.
Yeah, they should have been fine, really. Like, I can't.
They were nowhere near.
They just got them.
It's shocking. Like, it's baffling. Like, I think you look at the teams below them, like Southampton, like Ralf Hasenhüttl, he's in big trouble. And no one's really saying that. Like, he has to be. You look at the squad that has got up with Watford and what they've done. Like, it's baffling. And now you're bringing Ranieri. Okay, he's won a league title by luck, maybe.
Maybe Champions of Destiny, to be fair. I don't know. I'd say luck, but I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, it was a blip. It was a blooper. Like, it's... No one's going to do it.
It was an anomaly.
Yeah. Like, but I fear that the ceiling is now 15th. I think Watford are playing for 15, 16, 17 now. Like, this has turned into a Big Sam job. Like, this has turned into a... We're clinging on. But that's what they've portrayed by sacking the manager.
Yeah,
they've put pressure on Ranieri right now by sacking the manager, in my opinion. So early,
I don't get the logic of hiring someone.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
In December 2020, to turn your form around, get you promoted from the championship, and then 7 points from seven games is good innings, and then you sack him like that.
You kind of wonder, was there something like, did something happen?
Is there a personal relationship issue maybe? I don't know.
I don't know, but like, I mean, for a club like Watford to, and this is a problem a lot of these clubs have really, isn't it? You'd nearly be kind of like, lads, let's keep the horses in the stable there for another few games, do you know? Don't.
But it looked like
promoted is huge for them. Like, but like, they're just going to be one of those yo-yo clubs now to go straight up, straight back down, straight up, straight down. Like, what, they've got 13 managers since that ownership group had taken over or something like that? That's nuts. That's only in the last decade.
You wonder, does an impending international window like make decisions a bit snappy? Like, do they go, right, if we sack him now, we'll get 2 weeks, or we'll get a week before. Look, it's 11 days. Ranieri's first game is against Liverpool. Like, it's arguably not a great start for someone, is it? Like,
but that's what I mean. If had they left Munoz in for the Liverpool game, right, at home, and they lose that one, you're going, okay, mate, I don't think he should have been under pressure after that. If, okay, we're reading into the future, something that's not going to happen, but then you go away to Everton and you get 0 points. Let's just say you get 0 points. You could probably start going, maybe then you could start looking, but like, Liverpool at home and Everton away are two of the harder fixtures you're going to have. Like, but at least then you've got something to kind of go, like, you're bringing a new manager in now and he's probably going to lose the first two games, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
The way things are at the moment, like, it's strange. He could have bought, the club could have bought himself time by just seeing how those two fixtures went. And he, to be honest with you, I think he probably could have got point, maybe even 2 points out of those games if they really wanted. That's okay, fair. Maybe not against Liverpool away, but if they got a point out of those two games, you'd be looking going, he's got 8 points from nine games, it's not the worst. Like, and you've played Liverpool at home and Everton away.
I know, and I just used that question to bring you back down, and now I'm going to bring you back up again. Top three managers you would replace Ollie at United?
Right, one of these, I this took me a long time of thinking, and one of these breaks my heart to say, but I might leave him to last. The first one, I think that everyone is probably going to, or that would say, is probably Antonio Conte, just because he's on the block, he's available. Would he suit? Arguably not. I wouldn't have him personally,
but anyways.
No, I don't think. I think he's too similar to what you had with Mourinho and Van Gaal. He might get your results, but it's not going to be entertaining. I don't think it's going to be entertaining whatsoever. The next one, I actually have four, to be honest with you. The next one, Zidane, and the reason I say the Zidane is because he can manage those. I think I wasn't on the pod last week, but I thought Ole had a shocker in the past week in terms of, like, he was afraid, I can't remember what game it was, to take Ronaldo off, and decided to take McTominay off, which cost them the whole game, like, to bring on another attacker. You take off your defensive midfielder, who's having the best game at your 11 on the pitch, by the way, who's heading the ball, blocking the ball, clearing the ball. You take him off, and you lose 1-0 from a header. Like, what do you expect? He had to be strong there and take off one of the front three, and he didn't. And that started a knock-on effect. And I think now Zidane might, he's obviously managed Ronaldo before and has a good relationship there, but I think he probably has the aura to manage people like Bruno Fernandes, Cavani, the respect possibly as well. And ultimately Greenwood, if you were to get someone like Zidane, and Greenwood might be the man to miss out a little bit in terms of his development, maybe, because if you're bringing Zidane, you're going to win something. You're not bringing him in to just, let's try and scrape fourth.
Yeah, that's fair. Zidane would be a nice pick, actually. I'd kind of be all in on that.
And then I have two. The one that's going to break my heart and I think is the perfect fit for United if they had the bank balance there to do it, is Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a great fit for United. He'd bring them back. As a Liverpool fan, right, if Klopp gets sacked tomorrow, that's fine. Let me...
He's at his level. That's it.
No. I think, as a Liverpool fan, right, if Klopp was to drop dead tomorrow, please God he won't, because since he stopped wearing the glasses, we're unbeaten. But I would take Rodgers back in a heartbeat. I think he's gained enough from Celtic to Leicester. I think he's brought Leicester to where he's going to bring them. I don't think Leicester can do more than what they're doing now without significant oil money. Which I know they have significant money, but it's not the same. They don't have the audience. They don't have the catchment area. They don't have any of those things to be a bigger club than what they are, in my opinion. So, I think Rodgers brings that. What's the word I'm looking for? The drive from within the club that United have missed for years. They've gone too multinational, in my opinion, if that makes sense. Too big for the boots, and they've lost their Busby Babes, their Ferguson type of heart.
Home-grown players.
If that makes sense. And I think Rodgers is the type of person that always brings that to a club.
Nice, Brendan Rodgers keeping it domestic. Yeah.
My argument there would
I'll
be...
Get on. I'll go for that. Did you say you want more?
I have one more, but one, Sass. I'll tell you the one they're going to end up with, yeah.
I was going to say, Rodgers is to Leicester what Nuno was to Wolves.
Oh, that's a bit harsh. I don't know.
Do you not? So you don't think Nuno can stretch his legs with top Spurs?
Spurs, I don't think so.
Could he have stretched his legs with United?
No, I don't think so either. I just think there's certain managers that find themselves in a perfect fit.
Sean Dyche.
Yeah, I just think there is certain managers that they just. Like you look at, say, and it's probably a bad. You look at like when Hull first came up and they had Phil Brown. He never worked anywhere else. You're gonna go way back, Paul Jewell, Wigan, to a latter extent maybe going further back Bradford. But there's certain managers just they land in the right spot, it just works.
But okay, bottom feeder. Would you have taken Nuno when he came available?
No, I wouldn't. Not listen. We need a game changer at manager. Like, and I've said it. I know I said it to you today, lads. If my bins were not taken out properly, I am blaming Solskjaer. Like, I do not care. Like, he is so bad. But like, and this is my humble opinion, which is also steeped in fact. We are the biggest club in the world, and we deserve a game changer manager. Like that wasn't Nuno either. Do you know what I mean? Like it and. It's certainly not. I don't know what I was considering. Never mind.
Well,
but yeah,
I'll tell you what.
It's not going to be Nuno, anyways. Like so.
The way United have gone with their peaks and troughs. Well, there's no real peaks, I suppose. After well, unless you got Mourinho winning the Worthless Cup. Is that what he won? But the only thing I'll finish this particular question on is United will end up with Ronald Koeman.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Koeman leaves Barca. Xavi comes in November. Koeman goes to United.
I can throw another wild one in. Just looking at how they're kind of struggling a little bit in the league. Maybe Poch isn't long left for PSG. Wild one, look. We'll leave it at that.
Poch to Barca.
Maybe.
But from what I'm hearing from my sources is that Xavi is going to Barca in November.
Yeah,
he is.
Next question.
So, keeping it on the United jam after that bad result in the weekend, can Damari Gray realise his potential at Everton? Because I thought he was excellent. He was really, really good. Like, and he smoked Fred on the ball as well, which is. Bit demoralising considering Fred is supposed to be our enforcer, and Damari Gray just kind of like good luck to you.
He's next level, isn't he? I think he's next level, and I'm shocked that he's ended up at Everton. I don't know how he wasn't linked after Leverkusen with someone more
the
reputable.
Money, like it cost nothing, like it was shocking.
Yeah, it's one of those signs that someone like I suppose like Liverpool have been shrewd over the year. Everton were that was a really solid signing from them, but I don't think he lasts long there. Like the only thing is, they'll want big money from now. It's going to be like Rodwell a few years ago. That's what they want, from 50 million or something. Everton are good like that when they get a good talent. Everton are good like that when they get a good talent and they kind of nurture it and put the price tag up and get rid of them. But yeah, look, I think his potential is going to come at a higher level, be that in the higher table teams, be it a United or a Chelsea, even maybe I could see, or even a City reaching out to get him, or alternatively maybe in Spain. Saz, what do you think?
Yeah. I don't think he's going to reach a potential at Everton for the simple fact that I think he's going to be bought before he hits his ceiling.
I don't even know what age he is at the moment, but he's not old. He's got lots of years ahead of him. I'll throw out the question, as the bottom feeder is
currently left us.
AWOL. Early front runner for player of the year. I suppose it's a nice question that finishes off on the old.
Yeah, Emmy and Smith Rowe. And next question.
Everyone's obvious choice, I think, is, well, not everyone's obvious choice, but the neutral's choice probably would be Salah. But I think there's lots of.
At this moment in time, yes. But.
Over 38 games, maybe not.
Can I also throw out the fact that, look, Salah was exceptional, but a close second for man of the match. I think it actually was split man of the match.
Foden.
I just think if he gets a run of games.
The thing about City is, you almost can't give any other players player of the year because none of them play enough. As in, the rotation policy by Pep, you don't know who's going to play in the front three from week to week.
Yeah.
Man City is the worst team to have a player in your fantasy football from, because you just don't know if they're going to play.
And that's their strength, is that, like, I've said 100%. This before, I do think Liverpool have the best starting 11.
Yeah, but you pick up one or two knocks.
Yeah, and then like last year, and then they're just gone.
I'd assume bottom feeder probably would have said Fred, but we'll just have to put it down on the record as Fred, because he's not here.
Fred. But I suppose we'll move on. I think touch that. He's asked all his questions. I think we're handing it over to you, I think, for a bit of.
Yes, sir. Yeah, look, I suppose I wanted to fire a few questions over to the URC, and it's, what are we on now? Going into week three, I think.
Into week three, yeah.
It has been largely enjoyable from the bits that I've seen.
I just cut off there. But,
no, thanks, mate, for interrupting.
Put you down for Fred as player of the
player of the year.
Player of the year. Okay. Anyway, moving swiftly on.
The first round viewing figures with the URC surpassed previous viewing records of 857,000 in 2017-2018, and that was in the Derby weekend. But URC have set a target of 1 million per week throughout this campaign, and they're already above 857,000. Do you think? It can reach the 1 million a week.
I'm gonna predicate this, that I've probably been over enthusiastic about this as a concept and stuff like that.
You have.
And look, I'm comparing it though to what it's been the last few years.
Yes.
Which is a substandard product. They're doing a few things well. Obviously they did free to air, but unlike the Pro 14, the free to air coverage was on TG4. And in Wales, S4C, which are native speaking languages. And look, while it shouldn't be an issue, unfortunately it is. And RTE always wins in terms of viewings and stuff like that. They also have an OTT service, so an over-the-top service, so like your NFL Game Pass, which apparently the Premier League can't factor in for logistical reasons. And then they have your subscription service via, say, Premier Sports. You're also now bringing in an extra country in South Africa, which is a rugby-mad country. So you're adding all those extra viewers to the table. So I do believe it's possible. I would have slight reservations as to if the numbers in week one and week two were a novelty factor. If we can get kind of those Springbok talents, your Mornay Steyn, your big, like if you had, say, for example, Leinster versus the Bulls, Mornay Steyn versus Johnny Sexton, that's a watch for people outside of the competing nations.
I think you're right, yeah, but what may have let them down slightly is the international window with South Africa at the moment, because as they're visiting teams at the moment and they're in Ireland and stuff like that, it's going to get people in the stadiums, but also the people that can't get to the stadiums are going to watch. And as a result, they may, that I would fear that that might be their peak.
Yeah, look, absolutely very true. I'd also preface this by any fixture that had a South African side, not was competing, but the Springboks played the All Blacks in a kind of a bit of a classic Saturday morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, can you really go from watching a classic to then go and watching a domestic fixture, let's call it that for argument's sake, in which it's a substandard side to what you're used to seeing, say, in the Super 14? Look, I do think they've given themselves the best chance with the model they've gone with of OTT, free-to-air, and on English-speaking channels. As well as, if you, look, it's now more attractive if you're a Sky or an OTV subscriber to just throw on BT Sports and the Premier Sports package as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I have to hand it to them that I watched Munster on Saturday night on Premier TV, and I have to say that the coverage was brilliant. The camera angles were brilliant.
Proved.
The quality was brilliant. I didn't like the studio. I was never a fan of Premier Sports studio, but other than that, everything was, it was like watching an international fixture.
And I'll tell you what they did well. It's not on all fixtures or whatever, but I went split screen. The Cardiff, look, I call them Cardiff Blues, another rebranded Cardiff Rugby. We're playing the Ospreys, bit of a Welsh derby. Look, it was a good game, but Eddie Butler was in commentary. And maybe it's people of my era. Eddie Butler is Six Nations, sexy November international rugby. And he just has a voice that just brings me back to my childhood. They've managed to pick up good commentators in the British Isles, which is huge.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was good. I didn't get to see the games on free-to-air. But yeah, the Premier Sport one package I found brilliant. Question two. The South African teams have been poor thus far. Does the addition of the box increase their chances massively or at all?
So, it's a tricky question to answer this. Okay, so I think the box obviously do improve. We're not going to see them until, I think it's round five. Is it round five? It's the last COVID, week in last week.
COVID
in November.
Pending as well.
Yeah, last week in November. South Africa's kind of a strange nation in that, like, not a strange nation, they're probably doing it the right way. They have a lot of talents spread elsewhere, like Faf de Klerk, for example, plays at Sale. So they're not getting all these springbacks back. You obviously look at, like, Diolande, who's going to go back to Munster. Do you know what I mean? There's plenty of South African talent sprinkled all over the world. But there's a few other things as well. Like, you got to bear in mind, the springbacks are out of the case, so you've kind of got less experienced players playing for South African sides. As a result of those less experienced players not being internationals, the majority of them have never actually played in the Northern Hemisphere, which is a huge learning curve. Like, look at, say, the Bulls that played Connacht on Friday night. There's a big difference in the sports ground on a rainy, wet Friday evening than there is in playing Loftus Versfield field at altitude and this type of thing. So that's a learning experience.
Playing up the hill, as they say.
Yeah. It's also reffed a little bit differently. It shouldn't be, but it is. And then there's also the thing as well that these South African sides, COVID hit in March 2020, they didn't play a game outside of South Africa against a non-South African opposition until the Rainbow Cup final, and that was just the Bulls against Bennett and Jerizo. So there is a lack of playing time in the last 18 months too as well. I do think they're going to improve, and I think 2 to 3 years' time, this will be up there with your top 14 in France and your English Premiership.
Is it too much of a handicap, as in, for the South African teams to give a good account of themselves and qualify for Europe this year, this season? Have they now, because they're obviously not coming back to week five, is it too much of a handicap against them?
Well, we know, like, I don't know if you know, but there is this shield system, which is going to cause issues at the end of the season. But effectively, the top side in each shield qualifies for Europe. So you will have at least one South African side that qualifies.
Yeah.
And then it's the next top four. You just kind of hope that, for say the URC's case, that those top four sides are all in the top eight. If you end up with a side in 10th that gets European qualification, that can be an issue.
And also, what happens with that South African side that does play in Europe? So, do they have to play in Europe? Is that the agreement? So they go and get Toulouse, we'll say.
Yes.
So their home fixtures are in Europe.
That I'm not 100% clear on.
You would imagine they'd have to be, though, wouldn't you?
But surely if they say it retreats, this season's a bit different. It's that big pool that it did last year as well. It's two big pools. It's a bit strange. I'm not a huge fan of it. But look, if it reverts to type, it's got to be home and away. Especially if you top your group, you've got to get the benefit of a home semi-final.
With those fixtures, it's 2 weeks typically between each fixture, isn't it? Like, so.
Yeah. Look, it's a hell of a flight. It's 13 hours, say, to Johannesburg or whatever. But in terms of TV times, it's kind of perfect because it's an hour early. There's an hour in the time difference, basically, with Dublin and London, say, and South Africa. So
yeah, you can have your lunch for one fixture and you'll be on dinner for the second.
Exactly, it's perfect.
Okay, I'm going to jump to the bottom of the pack of cards here. Munster, are they back?
Back to what?
Back to the glory days. Well, Zeebo's back in the side. Ben Healy has kicked Carberry out. Craig Casey is like a stick of dynamite. Steinman's, Jesus, he's going through men for no one's business. Are they back to European challengers?
I don't know. And the simple fact is, they were the bookie's second favourite for the title. They've kind of always been thereabouts. If you look back over the history, I knew this question was coming. They've not finished anywhere outside of the top four since I only went back as far as 2016, 2017. They've always been in the top four, so they generally do quite well domestically. So there's another question coming, which I think will kind of pave the way for answering for that. But cautiously, they look good. They'd be disappointed with the first half showing against the Stormers. And the Stormers, I thought, were very good in the first half. There was a lot of errors though in once, a lot of unforced errors, like that new rule about pre-binding before the engagement and stuff. Like, they got pinged two or three times for that, which it's a new law, it should be fresh in everyone's mind and stuff. So look, a few unforced errors in the first half, very good in the second half from Munster, but there'll be concerns about that.
Bonafide, you had a bit of a smirk there. What did you have an opinion on Munster?
No, I think they're alright actually. They're like, I'm not a big fan of Munster, but like, they've got a, they're a nice side at the minute, aren't they? Craig Casey's unreal as well. He's quality.
There's a
you kind of be jealous about like him playing. Like, why are you playing down there? Like,
because he's from down there.
I think they did try to poach him at some stage, but like, seriously, like, get your act together and come up there and play in blue. Don't be, no need for that.
I wouldn't fit the shirt. Okay, so what has the first 2 weeks or the two rounds taught us about Irish rugby as a whole so far? Because obviously we've a really important international window coming up.
We've read there's a November international. It's not an international window, okay?
No, it's an international window.
Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah. I've kind of banged this drum for a long time, so you probably won't be surprised to hear this if you've listened to any of our podcasts, but central contracts are great for provincial rugby. But I have strong reservations about their benefit to us in developing a good national squad. We'll always put a 15 on the park that will be relatively competitive, unless you're playing like the All Blacks, let's just say, for example. We'll be relatively competitive. But I just have strong reservations about, I think a point to touch on is, like, generally speaking, it's Leinster or Munster 1 or 2, it's Ulster 3, and then it's Connacht 4, and it kind of has been that way for the last, say, 20 years. That's largely because of the school systems. So the Leinster competition is arguably stronger at the present anyway. And then Cork and Limerick second. Then it's Belfast. And then look, Connacht's trying to get there, it's just not getting there. So arguably, Leinster and Munster have the pick of the 18, 17-year-olds in the country. Arguably, let's just say that for argument's sake. But the problem is they come into a huge club with star names and they just don't get the game time. They're going to get less of that game time with this new structure that's designed to avoid international breaks. The structure of the URC is that you're always in a position, barring injury, to get your best names on the pitch. Because they want to be this global brand. That's the lofty ambitions anyway. So I do think potentially we're coming to a time where the central contracts that have served us so well in developing rugby in this country, probably now we need to look at loosening the grip and allowing Ben Healy to go play in English Premiership. Allowing Luke McGrath to go play in France. Allowing Madigan is a perfect example. When he left, he should have still kept on. in the Irish setup, like Zeebo as well and Racing. Like, go and play abroad, become a better player, come back for the internationals window.
Zeebo was a man for me, actually, just while you said him there, that when he went to France, to me, seemed like he was losing a touch a little bit, gaining a little bit of weight, but he's come back to Munster. Okay, he's not playing 80 minutes a game, fine, but he looks electric.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, living that French diet.
Living that French diet of wines, baguettes, and...
croissants.
Croissants, but I do think it broadens your horizons. Like, it's the same for an English Premier League player, like, If a young English player, like, you look at all these young English players that look, it's probably not less as big a deal now, but a lot of them, like your Sanchos, that went to Germany, and there was a number of them playing their trade in Germany, as opposed to waiting in the wings at City, where they're not going to get any development. It's kind of a similar situation. I do think we need to loosen the grip a bit and let them kind of head on out.
Okay, and finally for you, the Sasquatch, star performers at this point, either individual or team.
Sides or, I wasn't sure if it was sides or players, so look, I did a bit on both.
Some Google.
So obviously, look, the unbeaten sides: Leinster, Ulster, Munster, Benetton. Seemed to have carried on that Rainbow Cup form. Did a brilliant win against Edinburgh. I don't know if anyone's seen that, the 40-meter drop goal to snatch the day against Edinburgh. They're managed by Marco Bartolomi. So anyone who is familiar may remember that man in the second row for Italy. Probably not like the star name of a Parise in the Italian sides that were getting pumped, but was a dogged enough player, and he kind of seems to have encaptured all that is Benetton in Benetton. Obviously, Monty Ioane is always going to pick up tries as well. He's electric as well. And then the Ospreys as well. So they had kind of... They're 2 from 2 as well. And then on a side note, the side that lost in week one, Clonetley have an electric backline. Steph Evans, brilliant to watch. They've obviously Jonathan Davies coming back as well. He's kind of looked a bit slow. The hamstring was a bit tight, but I think they can pose issues for a lot of sides. They've been an absolutely electric backline.
Before we wrap up, just a question for around the houses. And I love this one. The Sasquatch knows I love this one. Autumn Internationals, Ireland's starting 10 and second choice 10. Who are they?
Oh.
I think you start Freddie Barnes and you've no plan B, because you'd love to hear that, wouldn't you? No, I'm joking.
oh, I just got sick.
I see Johnny Sexton. I think Jack Carty deserves a second chance in the 10 shirt. Probably it'd be interesting to see who can win that battle between Ben Healy and Joey Garvey. You know, obviously Joey Garvey wasn't great on the weekend, and Ben Healy did definitely seem to step up.
He was the game changer, wasn't he, really? Like,
yeah, give or take. Well, I'd argue Jack Donohue and Gavin Coombs. Gavin Coombs really. Scarlets are playing Munster this weekend. I'd like to see that. Scarlets Munster, I'd like to make a decision after that, maybe on Sunday.
Yeah, but if you have to nail your colours for the mask, we're playing New Zealand. Who's starting and who's on the bench?
Johnny's starting. It's a silly question.
Kind of has your to bench. Johnny against that game, isn't it?
Johnny, well, they're gonna bring in three. It's gonna be Johnny's gonna be one of the three. Then you have to. I think everyone would like that little bit of maturity to see from Jack Carty. I think he probably makes it. Whether he makes the bench in every game is another question.
I think we've seen all we're gonna see in Ross Byrne. I do think
give the brother a look.
Give the brother a look, but like, why is the brother not getting a look at Leinster? Really, I suppose is the next question. Really,
that's another question entirely.
But they're probably going to bring Carby out of pure, they feel there's this weird thing about, and I know we're elongating the point here, but the IRFU seem to think that they owe something to Carby. That's the way it always comes. Like, it seems that way. Like, he gets added because we feel like we owe him something, and we don't. He's soft, so yeah.
Just bars him at the end of the pod.
From my couch, Joey Carberry, you are soft.
I can see the headlines tomorrow.
Quick last one just to draw on. I did just kind of scribble down a few players. I'll just throw them all out. Connacht, Mac Hansen, looking electric against the Bulls. Brilliant try. The Ospreys, quick shout out to Garrett Anscombe. 2 years out with injuries back, kicked them to victory against the Cardiff Blues, kicked all 18 points. Munster, there's a few, obviously Gavin Coombs or whatever, but keep an eye, probably a personal one here. Keenan Knox, he is a South African, but he's a tight head. I thought he was brilliant against the Stormers. Ringrose looked good in week one. I haven't watched the Gwent Dragons game because I seen the score. I was away and I was like, I'm not watching that. Low lights of that. And Ulster, Craig Gilroy has looked okay over the previous 2 weeks. So keep an eye on him as well. See how he develops. He could force his way into the Irish panel. I'm not saying a starting side, but into the Irish panel for the Autumn Internationals.
Which you can catch live on RT2.
Or the mid-season slump. No, I'm joking. That'll be some power play.
Very good, Sasquatch. Thank you very much. Well researched. Nice. Well done.
Thanks very much for the questions. So I suppose moving on, it's the favourite segment of the week in partnership with our affiliate members, our affiliate partner, sorry, usasports.co.uk. NBA is just around the corner. NFL's kicked into full flow. You may fancy a jersey. Click the link in the podcast description and browse the wide variety of stock they have in hand. So gentlemen, this week's, have you seen this? Any honourable mentions before we get to...
Nah, too giddy about this one. This one's too good.
Too giddy about this one. Okay.
I think everyone... Yeah.
I think everyone's probably seen it now, but I think this goes out tomorrow morning, which is Wednesday. So obviously the Jacksonville Jaguars are struggling. They play on Thursday night. They go 4-0. Urban Meyer, his first year back with the Jacksonville Jaguars, goes down to a... Again, back down to a college game, and he's videotaped in some fairly promiscuous and kind of unflattering positions with women who aren't necessarily his wife, or aren't necessarily in his
age bracket.
Let's just say, yeah. We'll throw up the link to the video, the Minuteman off Barstool Sports. There's a brilliant kind of take. And look, there is a conspiracy theory flowing with this, that the USC job, which is one of the highly coveted college jobs, is up for the picking. It's cringy. And then the post-event speech, I suppose, was probably not a great look either. He meant, like, it's just terrible. Khan, who's the owner of the Jags, has come out and blasted him. Players have blasted him that he'd lost the dressing room even before this. Urban Meyer could be back in college football, where he is a god, let's just mention, a lot sooner than Black Monday, which is obviously the final regular season weekend.
It's just, I don't understand the jobs in college football seem to be more coveted than an NFL job. It's strange, like.
It's an easier sell, though.
Like, it's an easier sell.
Best crop of high school players. Like, that, all that talent just gets pooled out in the NFL. Like,
you There's can no salary
stockpile
cap.
It. You just stockpile it. Like, you're basically putting out a dream team every week, like. And you do that, like, if you can do that for 5 years, like, all 3 year quarterbacks, like, your starting quarterback could be a 5-star recruit. The fella on the bench could be the 5-star recruit, like, from the class after. Like, it just keeps rolling.
But why was he... Is that why he wasn't good enough... Or, sorry, I don't say wasn't, because he's still with the Jags, but is that why he isn't good enough with the Jags? Because he doesn't have that...
His skill is recruiting. Like, some of those boys really have a knack for...
For recruiting. Like, and then it's offensive coach.
Just, like, selling these kids a dream, like... You want to get your
mama house. Hey, Johnny, you want to see the new Air Jordans, huh? You want some Air Jordans?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too far off the mark.
Yeah. Look, and then I think too as well, you've got to bear in mind, it's college. People are a little bit more excited than, I'm working a 9-to-5. I'm missing my kid's dance recital. I'm here to watch this game, so do something for me. As opposed to 100,000 twisted drunk 21-year-olds. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a better environment. And there are smaller areas. Like, if you look at Florida, it's Gainesville, you look at Clemson, you look at Auburn, you look at Alabama, the kind of smaller areas. Like, one of the huge college programs, it was not huge, but in terms of fan base, Nebraska. There's no professional sports team in the state of Nebraska.
And they're taking over Dublin next year, aren't they?
They're playing Wisconsin in the Aviva. Those tickets go on sale rather soonish. I do think it would be worth a watch.
They're
but very
expensive. But, it's crazy. But the mad thing about the whole scenario is this video will go down so well with college fans. They will want him at their college because of it. Do you know that way? It's a weird kind of It's a weird, weird kind of thing. All the college fans will want him because of that video. Like,
it's a weird get-up. Plus, anyone that's kind of looking for Urban Meyer to come with a job, they kind of know what he likes. So this is a sell. You know what I mean? But look.
Roy go to hell.
Yeah.
All with Ole.
That's all from me.
It's all from me.
That is all from me.
Thank you and good night.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.